You're listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, go to nakedbiblepodcast.com and click on the support link in the upper right-hand corner. If you're new to the podcast and Dr. Heiser's approach to the Bible, click on New Start Here at nakedbiblepodcast.com.
Welcome to the Naked Bible Podcast, episode 256, Exodus 1, part 2. I'm the layman, Trey Strickland, and he's the scholar, Dr. Michael Heiser. Hey, Mike, how are you doing this week?
Oh, pretty good. I can hardly wait to wade out into the quicksand of today's episode.
Oh, chronology. You've got to love this. Secretly down deep, you love this stuff.
Look, I used to be a chronology nerd, right. I'll confess, but it has beaten me down.
But you're going to love, you loving this episode, right? I mean, you were preparing for this secretly. You're like, yes, I love this stuff, right?
Yeah, it brought back some memories. Some of them fond, some of them made me shudder.
Well, it's going to be fun to hear you get into the weeds.
Yeah, yeah. Well, into the papyrus, I guess. But yeah, see, there's a bad pun.
There you go. I thought that was my job.
Right, that is your job. You're in either affecting me or infecting me. Well, we might as well just jump right in. Again, this is part two of Exodus 1. And basically, textually, our entire focus is going to be Exodus 1:11. I will read that in a moment because I do want to back up just a tad to verse 8. We mentioned this, and I'm going to read something that I read in the first part to sort of set it up. But we're going to... Exodus 1:11 is it. There's just a lot that's going on there. So in verse 8 of Exodus chapter 1, we read, "Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph." He's not identified here. He's not called Pharaoh until verse 11. Carpenter, this is the quotation I read last time, writes, "This Pharaoh was not acquainted with the previous history of Joseph and Israel in Egypt. Or at least he did not choose to acknowledge Israel and her past relationships to Egypt. But more importantly, he lacked the knowledge of or refused to grant any significance to the close friendships that Joseph and Israel had cultivated with past pharaohs and Egyptians. The writer does not give the king's name, nor are the pharaoh's names given in Genesis," back in that material that related to Joseph. We don't get any names. What we do get is a reference, and we'll bring this up again. We get a reference to the district of Ramses in Genesis, but we don't have a pharaoh in Genesis referred to directly as Ramses. And I'm saying Ramses for a particular reason. We'll get to that as well. And it's the same situation here in Exodus 1. We've got a building or a storehouse city, a city referred to as Ramses, but not a person directly. Now, having said all that, we have a pharaoh in view in verse 11. Again, here's sort of our launching pad, and we're basically tethered to this for the whole episode. We read, "Therefore the Egyptians," again, the king and his people, his administration, "they were freaked out by the numerical growth of the Israelites. Therefore they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with heavy burdens. They built the people who were enslaved. Built for Pharaoh store cities, Pithom and Ramses." Now, we get these names, and if there is any prayer in Exodus 1, and you can throw in again the earlier reference in Genesis, even though that's going to mess things up because there's 400 years between Genesis, just remember this, store this away, especially if you're a late dater, this is a problem for you. There are 400 years between the time of Joseph back in Genesis when we get that name Ramses in the text and here in Exodus 1. Ramses II, no pharaoh in the Ramesside dynasty, of course, was 400 years old. And, you know, you've got a, if you assume from out of the gates that the reference to Ramses here in Exodus 1:11 refers to a person, you really have no hermeneutical right to say that it doesn't back in Genesis. The Ramesside dynasty is not that long. Okay, so the late daters have I'm telegraphing this up front, they have a problem with methodology. And that's going to become apparent as we go. Now, you know, early data's problems, late data's problems. That's why there's a debate. That's why, again, this is kind of a quagmire, the whole issue. But let's just, you know, focus on this verse and the names. And I'm going to be taking shots and helping out, doing a little bit of both, to the early date and the late date. I just want you to see what the issues are and why it's difficult, why there is debate. It is not simply solvable by appealing to 1 Kings 6:1 and saying late date and that's all there is. It's just not that simple, although you can make a good case for the early date. So here we go. If we look at Exodus 1:11, the issue, of course, is the names of the store cities, both of them, but mostly, you know, Raamses. Now, the name Raamses, the spelling of this name in both in Egyptian texts and in the Hebrew can vary. Here we have literally Raamses. There's like two A vowels in the pronunciation. It's not Ramses, it's Raamses, the way this is spelled. So I'm going to try to be consistent here and say Raamses when I'm referring to Exodus 1:11 specifically, but I'll also just refer to Ramses II just as a historical figure. But it, in the text, and this is going to become important, in the text it's Raamses, the way it's spelled. The first major chronological battle of the whole fight over the date of the Exodus. And of course, if you're dating the Exodus, it's the date of the conquest that follows, you know, with Joshua. Really, this is sort of a linchpin thing, you know, for how we think we might be able to understand and overlap biblical history, history of Israel, with ancient Near Eastern history, Egypt and Canaan, for that matter. As I said last time, I'll give you the basics of the two dates, early and late. Early date says the Exodus happened in 1446 because of 1 Kings 6:1, which says that in the fourth year of Solomon, that fourth year was the 480th anniversary of the Exodus from Egypt. We know on very good grounds, astronomical grounds, and because of both astronomy and the people who used astronomy, especially the Assyrians, okay, they're very good at this. Babylonians, you know, very good at astronomy and then working backward with their kings and where their kings encounter the Assyrian king and all this. As I said in the introductory episode, after about 1000 BC, the chronology, you know, at least on the with respect to Assyria and Babylon, works pretty well. It's pretty tight. You can really defend it and link it to astronomy. So we've got here an instance where we can date Solomon with a lot of confidence as taking the throne in 970 BC. His fourth year is 966. Subtract 480 years because you're moving backward in time, and you get 1446 for the Exodus. The late date says, well, not so fast. 480 is 12 times 40. So we might be dealing with 12 generations. And 40, again, a symbolic year for a generation. So we may not be able to just take the math literally. And they don't. They have the Exodus occurring during the time of Ramses, which is 200 years later than the early date. And the reason they want to fix it in the reign of Ramses or something in the New Kingdom is Dynasty 18, 19, 20. Those are the dynasties at least we need to worry about. The reason they want to put it in there is because of verses like Exodus 1:11, the name reference to Ramses. They feel that that justifies, you know, tying, you know, that's a peg. It's a chronological peg that we assign, you know, to the biblical story, and we can back up with Egyptian history, you know, real historical people. And the only thing that it really requires of us, so the story goes, or so the explanation goes, is that we not take 1 Kings 6:1 literally. So, you know, their defenses, you've got stuff in the story, and we alluded to some of this last time, the reference to Pharaoh per Aa, using that term, which in Egyptian means great house. It only gets applied to an individual person in Egyptian texts from the 18th dynasty forward. And so here we have it in Exodus 1:11. So they're saying this has to be stuff going on in the New Kingdom. Okay, specifically in the Ramesside dynasty, Dynasty 20. 200 years earlier, you get the 18th dynasty, and that's where early daters, it's still New Kingdom, but that's where early daters want, you know, to have things going on. So you have this 200-year differential. And I'm going over this because I want you to see that the late date, a lot of you won't like the late date because you want to take 1 Kings 6:1 literally. The late date is not just a flim-flam. It's not just, let's throw a dart at the board. I don't like, you know, biblical literalism. I hate the Bible, you know, so we're just going to throw this number. No, it's actually based on substance. 40 is a symbolic number. So is 12. Okay, you actually do have Egyptian material that can very readily situate and anchor these events in the Ramesside dynasty. That's true. It's real. The data are there. The question then becomes, is that the only way to look at the data? Are there other data elsewhere that can allow the early date to appeal to more than just 1 Kings 6:1? That it can actually, you know, go into Egyptian material and say, look, you know, here's the way we need to look at all this, and then defend the early date that way. Okay, this is a substantive debate. It's not the Bible lovers versus the Bible haters. If you've been taught that, I'm sorry, but you need to disabuse yourself of that immediately. It's just not true. So we're not about caricatures here. We're about actually, you know, trying to think, you know, trying to understand why these arguments, why these debates are what they are. So Exodus 1:11 is our first, you know, signpost for all of this stuff. The name Ramses. Now, since the passage describes the Israelites, the passage, the whole first chapter of Exodus describes the Israelites of the generation immediately preceding the Exodus. So the people who are under affliction in Exodus 1, these are going to be the people who Moses is going to deliver at least 40, you know, years later, because Moses is going to have to be born in Exodus 2. He's going to grow up. He's going to be 40. And then he's going to, you know, kill a man. He's going to flee Egypt. He's going to be out in Midian for 40 years. So now we've got 80 years. Again, can we take these dates literally or not? You know, all that kind of stuff. But there's some distance between the deliverance and this generation that's suffering. So, but you're going to have a lot of overlap here between the people, you know, maybe their children who are suffering under Egyptian taskmasters and the actual Exodus. So since we, you know, that's pretty well chronologically close, you know, we've got, you know, these generations that sort of butt up against each other. And since Ramses, again, that particular spelling, is used, and he's called Pharaoh. Since that name and that title is 18th dynasty, toward the end of the 18th dynasty and later, people are going to say, this has to be Ramses. It has to be a late date. The early date's impossible. And this becomes really one of the main reasons why this is argued. It is an obvious problem for the early view. It doesn't jive with the math of 1 Kings 6:1. But again, there are problems for it and also things that are pretty nice when it comes to the early view too. Now, we're going to throw David Roll in here basically at the end about him. I just want you to know that Roll's chronology, again, he's the guy that's in Patterns of Evidence, you know, that film, you know, borrows his work or utilizes his work. He also cannot tolerate an identification of Exodus 1:11 with the Pharaoh Ramses, or the Pharaoh Ramses, the second Ramses the Great, but for entirely different reasons. He will be therefore predisposed to be on the early date side of arguments when it comes to Exodus 1:11. And I'll say something about Roll and his view at the very end. I don't want to mess with it in here because it's just, this is going to be messy enough. So some important points before getting into the actual name Ramses in Exodus 1:11. Any date of the Exodus, which means any determination of the Pharaoh of the bondage period and the subsequent Exodus from Egypt, has to factor in other details of the biblical text. And here they are. And I'll be honest with you, some of this stuff just gets ignored. You will read defenses of the early date and the late date, and if there are two or three things in here, one in particular, or actually two verses in particular, that, I mean, I could pull books off my shelf right now by leading biblical scholars that discuss this date, and these verses are never cited. But they're really important. So we need to think about a number of things, and I'm not going to, again, take shortcuts and leave certain things out, but any view, early, late, Roll, whatever, has to factor in certain things. A big one is Exodus 2:15. And Exodus 4:19. I'm going to read you Exodus 2:15. When Pharaoh heard of it, this is when Moses kills an Egyptian. When Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. Right? So you have an individual person, Pharaoh. He sought to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian and sat down by a well. Okay? Now, Exodus 4:19 says this. It plays off that reference there in Exodus 2:15. This is when God is talking to Moses, you know, at the burning bush still. The Lord said to Moses in Midian, "Go back to Egypt, for all the men who were seeking your life are dead." So he flees from Pharaoh. And again, Pharaoh is used as a reference there to one person, because we're now in Exodus 2, Exodus 1, you know, started that trend. But, you know, it still means the administration as well. But here's the point. It has to include the individual Pharaoh. So when Exodus 4 says, when God says, "Hey, all the men who were seeking your life are dead," he's not excluding Pharaoh. The Pharaoh of the Exodus and the Pharaoh of the oppression cannot be the same individual. You'd be amazed. Again, I can show you commentaries as well, where people just assume that you can have the same guy for both events, like these verses just don't exist. They cannot be the same person. You cannot exclude Pharaoh from Exodus 4:19, because it was Pharaoh, he, who sought Moses' life. Okay, you can't take him out of Exodus 4:19 when he's in Exodus 2:15. So these references, again, have to at least include the Pharaoh. It could include others, but it has to at least include Pharaoh. And I would say, again, because Exodus 2:15 is so explicit, you know, that you just can't get around this point. We know that the Pharaoh alive at the time of Moses' murder of an Egyptian is not the same Pharaoh that's alive at the Exodus. Now, Acts 7:23, here's another little factor, tells us that Moses was about 40 years old when he committed this crime, when he killed this Egyptian. Now, that means the Pharaoh at the time of that act may have also been the Pharaoh of Moses' birth. But he can't be the Pharaoh of the Exodus. You know, and so we've got a 40-year span. It's possible. There are some pharaohs that reigned for 40 years or longer. And there's one in the, you know, Ramses the Great did. And then there's a candidate for the early date that did as well. Okay, but the fact is, even if you have a guy whose reign is over 40 years so that he could be the Pharaoh at the birth of Moses, you know, he knows Moses. Moses raised in Pharaoh's household. And he's the Pharaoh of the bondage. He's around when Moses kills this guy and then he wants Moses dead. Even though that can be the same guy for Moses' birth and Moses' crime, he cannot be the Pharaoh of the Exodus because of Exodus 2:15 and Exodus 4:19. You got to have a different Pharaoh there. Got to have a different guy. Now, I would also add this. One way Ramses II, since he is one of these guys that reigned over 40 years, for him to be in the picture at all, he reigned 66 years to be precise, you'd have to make him the Pharaoh of the bondage and at the time of Moses' murder, but then you'd have to have him die before the Exodus event. It's the only way you really get Ramses in the picture. You know, he would be the Pharaoh when Moses is born. He's the Pharaoh when Moses commits his crime. But he cannot be the Pharaoh of the Exodus. But if you read late date material, they desperately want Pharaoh or Ramses II to be the Pharaoh of the Exodus because of Exodus 1:11. Now, you don't have to read Exodus 1:11 that way. All it says is that the Israelites built for Ramses, you know, storehouse cities. Now that he can still be alive then, but he can't be the Pharaoh of the Exodus, is the point. So if you're a fan of Ramses II, if you're a fan of the late date, you can still have him in the picture. But you got to be careful, again, with how you use him. Now, another way the name in of Ramses in Exodus 1:11 could refer to a pharaoh and work with the late date is to say that Ramses is a reference to Ramses the First, not Ramses the Great. Ramses the First is two kings earlier, two kings removed. Ramses the First was the first pharaoh of the 19th dynasty. He reigned 2 years. Then he was followed by Seti the First, who reigned 11 years. And then Ramses comes along and he's there for 66. So this alternative possibility, it honors Exodus 2:15 and 4:19, would posit that the store cities of Pithom and Ramses were built, or at least begun, under the reign of Ramses the First. He then becomes, you know, the pharaoh alive at the birth, you know, or at the bondage and so on and so forth. And he dies. And then we got Seti. Then we got, you know, we've got Ramses the Second later. Again, you can put these two Ramses, these two Ramses pharaohs into the picture. You just have to be careful not to violate Exodus 2:15 and 4:19. So again, I'm speaking to late daters here. If this is what you prefer, don't skip those two verses. Don't do it. They actually matter. Now let's talk about late date still some more. Let's talk about Exodus 1:11. What's the late date evidence to connect Ramses in that verse to one of these Ramesside pharaohs, either one or two? Okay. What's the evidence? Why, when we read Exodus 1:11, why should we think of the Ramesside dynasty? And of course, the reflex response is, well, it says Ramses. What else could it be? We'll see. Now, I'm going to appeal to Redford's article here to begin. Donald Redford is a very well-known Egyptologist. I think he's still teaching. He was at Toronto for many years. I think he was, he might have been Hoffmeyer's professor. I've never actually done the chronology there myself, but he's at Penn State now. He's been at Penn State for a long time. He may still be teaching. He might be retired, though. But anyway, Redford is a well-known Egyptologist. He's published a lot of stuff, both popularly and scholarly. And he has an article specifically on the names and the store cities of Exodus 1:11. And I'll just call a few points from that where he talks about these names. Now, he says these are more or less his conclusions. He has detailed, you know, arguments, you know, and the articles are just cluttered with Egyptian words and all this kind of stuff. But these are basically his conclusions. He says, Pithom is a term used no earlier than the New Kingdom. Again, that helps late daters. Per Atum would be the Egyptian way of saying it. With respect, you know, to Egyptian grammar, again, the etymology, per Atum, Pithom, can work. Again, it ostensibly helps with the late date. Redford says, quote, to sum up, the texts themselves justify us in stating only that in the late New Kingdom, the name Per Atum occurs sporadically in connection with the Eastern Delta. So there is Egyptian evidence, and by that I mean textual evidence, that gets this term. If you're wondering what happened to the R in Egyptian, it's Per Atum. In Hebrew, it's Pithom. Okay. If you know both Hebrew and Egyptian, you'd be able to follow Redford's arguments on the etymology. You're going to have to trust me here. You know, I'm just reading his conclusions. You got it. You got the name in the Eastern Delta. You got it from Exodus 1:11, and you have it in Egyptian texts. Again, no earlier than the New Kingdom. Second, when he talks about Ramses, he notes the spelling, and that's going to become an issue here. He says, this city, he does think it refers to a city. This city in Exodus 1:11 is usually identified with Per-Ra-Mes-Su in Egyptian, the new capital, which Ramses II built somewhere in the Delta. End of quote. Again, so it's not that rules out Ramses the First. Redford accepts that the term Ramses refers to the pharaoh, but doubts, though, that the biblical name refers to the royal residence, mostly because what we see in the Hebrew text is not a correct transliteration of the city name. Let me just reiterate that again. Redford's looking at the Hebrew text of Exodus 1:11, Ramses. And he's saying, well, yeah, okay. You know, it's usually taken by biblical scholars to say that Ramses refers to Per-Ra-Mes-Su, which is Ramses II's capital. But if it was, again, and you have, sorry, I'm getting into the little into the language here a little bit. I'm going to say it again. Per, Ra, Mes, Su are the Egyptian characters. You notice there's two. There's not two A vowels there. It's not Per, Ra, A, Mes, Su. It's Per, Ra, Mes, Su. And so Redford says, if we have somebody writing about, you know, who was familiar with Egyptian, and good grief, I mean, Moses was raised in Egyptian, you know, Egyptian context, Pharaoh's household, he ought to know Egyptian. And again, if he wrote this, what we have in the Hebrew Bible, Ra'am sees two A vowels, you know, again, separated by consonants, the whole, I'm not going to get in the nuts and bolts too much here. But what we see in the Hebrew Bible is not a correct transliteration of the place of Ramses II's palace. It's not spelled correctly. It's not correct. It's not transliterated correctly. You would expect, again, a second A vowel. So Redford asks, is it not strange that if the two Egyptian toponyms, those are place names, were borrowed around 1200 BC by the Hebrews, the element per should be retained? Now, see, this is another thing. He's like, okay, well, if Ra'amses refers to this city, Per, Ra, Mes, Su, not only do we have an incorrect transliteration, but what happened to the per? It's not like with Pithom where they, you know, that gets blended with, you know, the autumn that follows. It's just gone. And he's thinking, you know, that's just kind of odd. And he writes in response to this. Again, the article is very detailed. It says, biblical Ra'amses and the Per, Ra, Mes, Su, apart from the personal names, seem to have nothing in common. So he doesn't, he thinks that it is a biblical writer's reference to the name of the Pharaoh, but he's like, it can't be to the place because they would have known how to write it. If this is a contemporary, this is key. I'm going to come back to this. If this is a contemporary writer in this Egyptian period, it's messed up. It's not what it should be. So he's like, okay, maybe the biblical writer of some other period, okay, some other period, this is going to open the door for the early date, is thinking of Ramses. Maybe that's possible, but it's really doubtful, even if this guy is thinking of the person, the historical figure, it's really doubtful that what they're building back in Exodus 1:11 is the actual palace of Ramses II. Again, this is an Egyptologist, you know, who he's not a Christian, he's not a believer, he's not an evangelical. He has no axe to grind here on any of the dates. He's just pointing out that this really isn't what we would expect to see. Now, Redford believes, again, the Hebrew transliteration we see in Exodus and the one back in Genesis too. What he actually believes is that that transliteration reflects an even later Greek transliteration of Egyptian. He adds as well that the Hebrew term translated store cities is also a late term, because in the Bible, it occurs only in 2 Chronicles and 1 Kings, you know, in other words, in, you know, past Solomon's era, which is way, way past the Exodus. So what Redford is angling for is, he says, you know, I think these terms come from a much later period. You can find Ra'amses in Greek literature. You can find that combination of vowels in Greek. So what Redford suspects is that a scribe living in a later period who could read Greek, and lots of Jews could, the Septuagint, hello, okay, that's where they got this transliteration. Now, if he's correct, there's no way to really argue well that Ra'amses should be, that the place, Ra'amses in Exodus 1:11, must refer, and you know, to the actual palace. He thinks that the term wound up in Exodus 1:11 by what a scribe decided to do centuries later. Okay, I want you to hold that thought, because that's going to become really important when we get to the early date. It's actually useful. So you might ask, well, let's just get into it. I don't want to drag it out too much. But what about the early date? The early date response to the name Ra'amses in Exodus 1:11 and other passages, again, Genesis 47:11, I'll be honest with you. It's kind of disappointing to me. I put this in the protected folder. Again, if you subscribe to the newsletter, you get the podcast article folder. There's an article by Ayling in there, Charles Ayling. I know Chuck, and he knows Egyptian. You know, he's trained in Egyptology. The article is disappointing, though, in that it was written in 1982. He does not interact at all with Redford's 1963 study at all. Zero. He never references it, and I don't know why. So it's a little disappointing, but it still has some good material in there. But what Ayling does is he follows another scholar, Ray, R-E-A, with how to sort of deal with the name Ramses in Exodus 1:11. So he writes this. Ray seeks to show that the city of Ramses, was not named after Ramses II, but was called Ramses by the Hyksos, an Asiatic group who seized control of the Nile Delta. We talked about the Hyksos last time, by the way. Back to the quote. Ray bases his thesis on three main arguments: the contents of the 400-year stela of Ramses II, the alleged veneration of the god Ra by the Hyksos, and use of Ramses as a personal name earlier than the 19th dynasty. So you're getting back toward the Middle Kingdom here. Now, I would say the first and third of these arguments are the most important. There's this thing called the 400-year stela. It was written, it was created during the reign of Ramses II. Okay? That much is known. It was created at the city of Ramses to commemorate an event that had taken place some years earlier before Ramses' father Seti had become pharaoh. So it's a memorial of some event that happened, you know, even before Seti was pharaoh. Seti, while serving as vizier under the late 18th dynasty king Horemheb, came to Per Ramses, again, the Egyptian city that Redford was talking about, Per Ramesu, okay? He came to that city to celebrate the 400th anniversary of the establishing of the Set cult. Remember, the Hyksos worshiped the god Set instead of the solar deity. Ray believes that this stele indicates that the 19th dynasty rulers were connected in some way, perhaps genealogically, to the Hyksos. There's no way to prove that the pharaohs of the 19th dynasty were partly Semite. Okay, this guy Ray that Ayling is quoting wants to sort of argue that he wants to connect the 400-year stela, even though it was written during the period of Ramses, all the way back to the Hyksos. And this is just not a very good argument. It assumes that the anniversary of the founding or the elevation of the Set cult that the stela mentions, it assumes that mention forces readers to conclude that the city in which the Set cult was established was called Per Ramses at the time the cult was established, way back in the Hyksos era. There's no way to prove that. That's far from clear. The stela could just be saying, hey, the cult was established 400 years ago in the place that we know today as the city of Ramses. Again, this is a non-argument, but again, these are disappointing arguments when it comes to trying to connect the name Ramses with a period 400 years prior. Because again, the early date doesn't mind, you know, having the Exodus be long before the time of Ramses. That's where they want it. They want the Exodus to have occurred 200 years before the time of Ramses II. And so this is one of the ways that they try to argue it. And it's just not a good argument. Fortunately, there are better arguments for the early date. Ayling writes this. He says, while the name did not become popular, you know, Ramses, until the days of Ramses II and later, occasional examples of the name are known from earlier periods. A very prominent figure in the late 18th dynasty, again, that's still too, you might massage that with the early date. A very prominent figure in the late 18th dynasty was Ramos, or Ramses. He was a vizier under Amenhotep III and Akhenaten. And that's still a little late for early date, but you know, well, this is what Ayling is trying to argue. Another Ramses is known from approximately Hyksos times. Now that would be better. And a still earlier Ramses is mentioned on a stele of a man named Ibi-Aa, probably of 12th dynasty date. So what Ayling's trying to do is say, look, you know, you have the name Ramses show up a few times earlier than the 20th or the 19th dynasty. And this is what he's trying to do. So he's going to take that and say, when we see the name Ramses here in Exodus 1:11, we don't necessarily have to conclude that this text has the 19th dynasty period in mind. That's the late date for the Exodus. The early daters want it 200 years earlier, and so they're trying to create sort of an argument by analogy that maybe somewhere in the time period that we need for the early date, you know, in the 18th dynasty somewhere, maybe there were other people called Ramses there, because we've got Ramses's earlier in Egyptian history. This is what the argument that's being made. Now, Ayling admits, though, and he's citing an article by Alan Gardner again, that the Delta residents of the Ramessides. He says Gardner in 1918 published a thorough study on the Delta residents of the Ramesside kings, per Ramses. Again, in Egyptian, it's per Ra-mes-su. While his conclusions as to the location of per Ramses must now be modified in the light of recent archaeological findings, Gardner's gathering of all known literary references to all towns bearing the name Ramses is still extremely valuable. From his list of cities, we can learn several things. It is very clear that the most important Egyptian city called Ramses, more fully per Ramses Meri Amon, translated the House of Ramses, the beloved of Amon, was named after the king, after King Ramses II, and no other person. We are forced to conclude with Gardner that the biblical city and the famous Delta capital, per Ramses, were one and the same. Now, Redford, of course, doubts this because of the spelling, but Ayling, and surprisingly enough, Ayling is an early dater, and he's actually in, you know, Patterns of Evidence, if you watch that. So how in the world can he say that Exodus 111 does refer to this residence? Again, Redford doubts that, but Redford and Ayling are gonna get married and have a baby here in a moment. Their notions are actually going to blend and support each other. Now, how in the world can you have an early dater say, yep, Exodus 111, that refers to Ramses II? And Redford would say, yeah, you know, it might refer to Ramses II as a person, but it doesn't refer to the residence because it's even later. How in the world can you say these things and come out with any hope for an Exodus that occurs 200 years prior to when Ramses lived? Well, let's see. Let's see. And it's actually going to make more sense than you think. You know, how in the world does this work? Now, what the argument basically is, and it's actually building off, in Redford's case, on the notion that a Hebrew scribe, someone who worked on the text of Exodus, did not know Egyptian very well. Okay, and he was using a Greek text. Again, that actually helps here. In short, Ayling believes that the place name of this store city in Exodus 111 was editorially updated by a later scribe. There's solid evidence that the original place name that Exodus 111 is talking about was Avaris. Remember, I mentioned Avaris in the last episode. Avaris was the capital of the Hyksos. They were Semites. It's in the Delta. It's in Goshen, okay? It is right next to, archaeologists know this, it is next to Pithom. It's next to some of the other names associated with the Exodus itinerary. Avaris was the capital. So what Ayling is hypothesizing is if Moses would, or somebody else, you know, would have written this text at the time of the event, Exodus 111 would have said they built the store cities of Pithom and Avaris. But a later scribe, after Avaris's name was changed, the Egyptians changed the name to Ramses, Ra-amses, okay, when Ramses II came to the throne. A later Hebrew scribe, knowing that this as a historical fact, later went back to the text and stuck the term Ra-amses in there so that his readers would know, what in the world are we talking about? What place are we talking about? Now, this happens in the Bible in other places very clearly, and the Bible actually gives you the name before and after. Luz and Bethel are, you know, kind of the, you know, the sort of the it's kind of the textbook example of this. This does happen in the text of the Hebrew Bible, and the Hebrew Bible actually notes it. Before the city was named this, it was named that. It actually tells you. We don't have that here, but the act would be the same. So that is how Ayling, as an early dater, copes with not only this reference in Exodus 111, but the Exodus 47:11. You had a scribe living later go back and insert the name Ramses so that his readers would know what these, where these places are, what they're talking about. So if that's correct, and again, that's reasonable. I don't know that it's correct, but it is reasonable. The place name Ramses is not a lethal obstacle to an early date for the Exodus, if that's correct. Editorial updating would also explain the fact that Per-Aa was used only of an individual from the 19th dynasty after, because the same scribe who's updating the place name would have known that Pharaoh, Par-O in Hebrew, Per-Aa in Egyptian. Oh, now that term is used of an individual. So it's okay if I use this term now of one person as opposed to a district or an administration. It also explains that. By the time of the updating, this term had long been used of a person, so it'd be normal to use it that way at the time of the scribal updating activity. Now, we've seen to this point, Exodus 1:11 is not a death blow by any means to the early date. I want to switch gears now and say, look, we've got to deal. If you're a late dater, you have a problem to deal with here. And I hinted at it at the beginning of the episode. Here's the problem. And I think it's a fairly serious blow to the late dater. You have to explain what your method is here. If you believe, as late daters do, that Ramses in Exodus 1:11 refers to the Pharaoh Ramses II and his residence, and or his residence. Okay, his residence got the name there. If you believe that Ramses there fixes, anchors the story, okay, of the bondage and then the Exodus in the 19th dynasty, if you believe that Ramses refers to a person there, then why don't you say the same thing in Genesis 47:11? Okay, here's Genesis 47:11. Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land or district, you could translate it, of Ramses. It's spelled the same way as Pharaoh had commanded. You have an inconsistent methodology. You're saying it refers to a person in Exodus 1:11, but you can't say it refers to a person in Genesis 47:11 because there weren't any Ramesides 400 years earlier. You have a problem. And it's one of method. You can't just arbitrarily say, here it refers to a person, here it doesn't. I'm good to go. It's inconsistent, is the point. Now, if you say, well, it was updated editorially in Genesis 47:11, then why don't you say that in Exodus 1:11? Well, I'll tell you why. Because that destroys, it undermines your late date position. Again, I don't really care one way or the other. I'm just saying, you should be consistent with the way you handle the data. Both views, early and late, can work with the data. Each view has to sort of massage things and frame the data in a certain way. They both have problems, but what I'm saying is I think the late date, and honestly, if somebody knows of a source or an article or something that discusses this methodological problem, I'd love to see it. It's not in Hoffmeier. It's not in Kitchen. It's not in the typical go-to resources of why we take it one way in this verse and another way in another verse. You have to, if you're going to take them both as a person, you actually have to, as a late dater, make an early date kind of argument in Genesis 47:11. Well, there it doesn't refer to a person. It could refer to somebody who's not a pharaoh, that's Ramses. That's exactly what early daters say about Ramses when they're plucking out these five or six examples, like Ayling does, of people named Ramses. So now you have the district of Ramses in Genesis 47:11 named for somebody else other than the pharaoh. Okay, I guess you can do that. You have to do that to disconnect it from the Ramesside dynasty, which is 400 years later. But that's precisely the argument made, the approach taken by the early dater. So the least you can do is not make fun of the early dater, you know, for the way they approach this problem. You're in the same boat, fella. You really are, because you can't have them both be pharaohs. So you've got a methodological problem. So I wouldn't say this is a death blow to the late date any more than I would say how the early daters talk about the names is a death blow to that view. I'm saying it's a serious problem, and you will not see this discussed, you know, in any detail. You know, I've got a source. I'd love to see it. It's just something I think that kind of gets overlooked. Now let's go before, as we wrap up here, to Roll, David Roll, you know, the Patterns of Evidence, or the guy that's featured in Patterns of Evidence. It's not his movie. It's Patrick Mahoney's movie. I've said in the intro, I like the film. I think the visuals are great. I think there are issues of chronology that might suggest we need to rethink Egyptian chronology specifically in the Third Intermediate Period, that might allow for a compression of Egyptian chronology that helps align certain texts, not necessarily individuals, certain texts from Egypt with biblical texts. Okay, so I'm on the record as saying I wish that this would get serious attention and not dismissed. But you're going to find out here in the next few minutes why it is dismissed. I said in this episode, Roll is going to be on the early dater side of the discussion of Exodus 1:11 because he cannot tolerate an exodus occurring under the reign of Ramses II. Why is going to sound kind of crazy. Okay, Roll cannot tolerate that because let's be fair here, he postulates that Ramses II is the biblical Shishak who reigned after Solomon. Let me repeat that. Roll postulates that Ramses II is the biblical Shishak, the Egyptian pharaoh that invades Judah. He believes Ramses II is actually Shishak, and Shishak, we know from the Bible, reigned after Solomon. A Solomon, his fourth year, was 480 years after the Exodus. So you can see why Roll doesn't want Ramses II to be the pharaoh of the Exodus. But how in the world can you move Ramses II all the way down to after Solomon? Specifically, Roll's revised chronology has Ramses II's year one, his first year reign, as the 37th year of Solomon. Now there are lots of ways. What Roll does is, see, what you're led to believe, let me start it this way, let me get into it this way. What you're led to believe in Patterns of Evidence is that, oh, we just need this slight 200-year compression, and then everything works beautifully. And I said, in the introduction, nobody ever gets into the question in that movie of, well, what's the basis for doing that? And what you're showing in the movie is, well, this guy, David Roll, doesn't really like, you know, he says there's problems with the chronology. So, yeah, I guess we can compress it 200 years. What they don't tell you is this other stuff that Roll believes. Roll has a whole system, a whole revised chronology. Again, part of it says that Ramses II came after Solomon. Nobody in biblical studies, nobody in Egyptology is going to swallow that pill. There are quite a number of obstacles to it. Now, Roll, again, has this worked out in his head and on paper. You know, he makes his case. One of his points of evidence is that Ramses was referred to as Sesi or Shesi by close family members. You know, he finds a text or two that has that. So Roll says, well, Sheshi or Sesi sounds like Shishak. And so he uses that to unite those two figures because other things he does in the chronology force him to do that. And he has this whole system worked out. But again, you're not told any of this. This is to call this radical is dramatically understated. For lack of a better term, I'll use it. This is a radical shift in Egyptian dynastic chronology forward 300 years from where it is presently, which pulls the middle, you know, imagine that timeline you see in Patterns of Evidence. If you shift Egypt's chronology, not the Bible's, but Egypt's chronology forward 300 years, yeah, if you're looking in the back, if you're looking at the back of the garage there, you see the Middle Kingdom inch its way up to the time of the Exodus. And then you have all these Middle Egyptian, you know, Middle Kingdom texts that seem to describe plagues and other stuff from Exodus 1. They all, now they're in the right category. They're in the right time frame. Yeah, they are. But now you got Ramses living after Solomon. Oops. I mean, when you move time, when you move chronologies, everything moves. So this is why I say, look, I wish that people would take a look at certain things that Rawls says. I think there could be fruitful discussion about some of the real problems in Egyptian chronology and how they affect the way that we look at scripture. But nobody's going to do it because the system, if you just look at what Rawls lays out, looks so crazy to Egyptologists and biblical scholars. They look at it and just shrug their shoulders and say, this is a waste of my time. This is just nutty. So what I wish would happen is that they would just look at isolated points that Rawls brings up, again, that might help in certain ways fix certain problems. But if you're thinking that patterns of evidence cures the Exodus problem, okay, you got a cure now, and now you got like another disease going on over here. Rawls knows what he's doing in terms of what this means. Rawls knows that if I shift everything here, everything has to shift. And so what he does is he's in search of ways to align the figures that have shifted together. How can I align Ramses with Shishak? How can I align this guy with that guy, in this place with this place, in this battle with that battle? He has to align everything. He has to come up with ways to tie all things together. And his arguments are tenuous. They are circumstantial. Okay, you got a couple texts where somebody in Ramses, maybe his girlfriend or something, called him Sheshi. That doesn't mean he's Shishak. Okay, you know, this is the kind of argument that you get. If he is Shishak, then there are other things about Ramses' reign, which is highly documented, and the biblical story that have to also align. It's not just a nickname. It's so much more. So again, I don't want to like burst anybody's bubble about this film. I feel positively predisposed to the film. I've seen it. I've talked to Tim Mahoney. He's a good guy. He's sincere. You know, nobody's like trying to pull anything here. But you're not being given the wider picture. You know, you can't just reference this movie and say, we're done. Cross that problem off my list. I'm doing apologetics. No, you're actually not. You're actually doing a poor job of defending something that might be true, the early date. And when you awaken to that, is that going to damage you or the people that you've been talking to? That's more of an issue. So again, I know chronology can be boring. You know, Trey says, you know, this tickles my fancy. Again, my confession is I used to be a chronology nerd. It's almost like an AA confession. Hi, my name's Mike, and I used to do biblical chronology. Okay, I used to be that guy, and it is interesting, but at the end of the day, what you have is a pile of speculations. You have a pile of things that might look nice, but if you're honest, it's a house of cards, and that doesn't just go for Rawls. It goes for lots of work in ancient chronology. It by definition must be subject to revision all over the place. And so I'm critical of people who are against Rawls that say there's nothing to think about here. There is stuff to think about here. You know, don't let Rawls, you know, like deter you from this or help or be an excuse to not see this. There is stuff to think about here. But I'm just, you know, as again, critical of those who think, well, man, I got a big howitzer now in my apologetics belt. It's called patterns of evidence. No, you don't. You don't. It's so much more complicated. It's literally a case where you have again lots of evangelicals running around here on this subject that literally don't know what they don't know. You say, well, Mike, you seem to live in that town. yeah, I do. That's why, Trey. Maybe that's why I have pugs. You know, they just comfort me at the end of the day, where I look at all this and say, this is just an inextricable, unsolvable mess. But now I'm going to pet Maury, you know, and Norman, and I'll feel better. That's kind of where, you know, we end up with this. So that's our first foray into the problems, the issues of biblical chronology. We're going to have other ones. as we go through this book. But again, hopefully this doesn't like kill your appetite. Hopefully it whets your appetite a little bit. But again, you realize how difficult and tenuous a lot of this stuff can be.
So Ramses II is not Ramses.
Ramses II, the king of the 19th dynasty, the Ramesside dynasty. You cannot conclude that Exodus 1:11 refers directly to him and his reign in real time. Okay, it could be an insertion, an editorial change by a later scribe, just so that you would know geographically where this stuff is happening. It's not a chronological linchpin. It might be a geographical, you know, linchpin, a geographical point of orientation, but it is not a chronological one.
Gotcha. You know, Ramses the Great came to Dallas in 1989.
I saw that. Did you go to that?
I did. I was 14 years old.
Look, our paths crossed.
Look at that. 1989.
And we didn't know it.
And we had no idea. I was there. We went to the opening night, the reception.
Okay, I wasn't there opening night.
You know, the exhibit was amazing. It had all those artifacts. And then they brought him out on stage. We all sat in the amphitheater. And they had music, smoke, and they brought his tomb out slowly and unveiled it. It was amazing. And I think it has never left Egypt again since then.
I think you're right. I don't think it's traveled.
Yeah.
Tut has traveled, but I don't think that one has traveled again.
Correct. You are correct. And so, yeah, our paths crossed. Look at that.
Yeah. I was a student at Dallas, you know, seminary. We lived in Dallas for 2 years. So Drina and I decided to go to see that. Even though I didn't see Trey,
well,
I still got to see a lot of good stuff.
We were both there in spirit, so you were probably knee deep in chronology and all this stuff then.
Yeah,
you were probably just eating it up. I can only imagine.
Yeah, I'm going to raise my hand. What about the?
All right, awesome. Well, next week we're going to get into chapter 2. So all right. Well, just want to thank you everybody for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit www.nakedbibleblog.com. To learn more about Dr. Heiser's other websites and blogs, go to www.drmsh.com.